do these days once a year to gather all the leaders together. I think the majority of people are here, one or two away because they're away. And Maria's not with us today. She tested positive for COVID yesterday. So me and Connor are in charge of logistics. That excites you, doesn't it? That laughter's a sort of God help us, isn't it, really? Like, but the food is here. I walked into the little at 7:55 this morning. The croissants were coming out of the bakery, and I just scooped them all in, and everybody was like, leave some for us. So. And, of course, there's one or two people here. I mean, one of the joys of a day like this, it's usually October we do this, is, you know, each year there are new people added into this arena, which is just great, you know, part of the development and growth of all that we're doing. So if you are a newbie on a day like this, then welcome. We want it to be informal, but really sort of integral. I think what we're going to open up and what we're going to present to you as some future visions, some quite definitive ideas, I think are hopefully going to excite you for the future and really help us all to just buy in to what this is all about, why Jesus said, I will build my church, and why we have offered ourselves to be a part of the ongoing development of that. And so you've got your order of service, so to speak, there in front of you. We're going to stick to times, and we do aim to be finished by 3:30 at the latest. So, you know, if you're new here, I think we're always pretty good at, like, we're never particularly running over. We want to make sure that you've got the rest of the day for all yet that's to happen in the rugby. I mean, it with your family. Is there rugby on today, Mike? I don't know. So as you see, the way that, let me just explain the day, then I just want to share something for a short while, just to sort of almost introduce the day. We are sort of building up as the day goes along to something we want to present to you after lunch today that's quite a game changer in terms of us as a church and moving forward. If you're not familiar with this situation, then also last year we invited all the group leaders or people who head sort of areas of church life to, we asked them about five questions, and they stood up and gave us answers to those questions. So what we've done this year is give them back to everybody and say, you know, one of the questions was, what do you want to happen in the next 12 months? So that's to now. And we've just asked them to just get up and talk about how that's progressing, regressing, whatever's happening in some of the goals that they set for this coming year. And so on and so forth. So this is going to be a great day, and I just pray that the Spirit of God will burn something new and fresh in your hearts as a result of that. If you've got a Bible, the only other thing to say is, anybody who's speaking, if you can use the mic, it's just helpful. We're not recording it, but just so that everybody can hear. Some people have got louder voices than others, and we don't want all that, like, can you speak up a bit, love, sort of thing. So, you know, we will be passing the mic around at points where people are sharing various bits. Matthew chapter 5, sorry, not chapter 4. So let me just set the scene and provide a few sort of provocative thoughts from a few statements that Jesus made here. So in the 1400s, so Bible aside just for a few minutes, in the 1400s, a new word came into the English language. It was the word priority. And at that point, it was singular, priority. And it meant what it was meant to mean, the one single thing above all things, the number one, everything falls into insignificance compared to this, the priority. And it stayed like that for 500 years. And it was in the 1900s that somebody suddenly added a little bit to the word. And it became from priority to priorities. It became plural. And so suddenly then, as companies and businesses and people who would talk about those sort of things, suddenly we didn't have a single most important way above anything point. Suddenly, you know, as we get now, companies will have P1, P2, P3. Some of you might work with that. So there are a number of priorities. And the scholars of literature or words would sort of say that it's a bit of an adulteration of that word, because priorities was originally the one single thing. Now you can have several single, inappropriate really, several single things that form the priorities. And we get that, and I'm obviously just playing on words a little bit here. To lead us into then, in terms of church as a group of leaders here, if we think of priority, let's go back several hundred years, singular, most important, identifiable, out there above anything else. Let me run a list by you of the things that make up church, and there's many more. What is the priority? Not priorities. People, building, budgets, truth, leadership, worship, health, growth, empowering, equipping, outreach. I'm just throwing it out as a preacher's point of view to sort of provoke a bit of thought rather than look for answers. But if we were to sit here and sort of say, what would you consider the priority in all of those and the many of the things that make up most church agendas and programs, it'd be just an interesting thing to sort of see where each one of us would go with all of that. So let me take you into Matthew, and follow my thinking here. There's a statement that Jesus uses, and he repeats the thing six times. And we know this, you know, we're talking about the Sermon on the Mount here. But I just want to bring a bit of a different feel to what Jesus said here. So Matthew 5, I'm not going to read it because it's the same five or six words. Verse 21, 27, 31, 33, 38, and 43. He says to the people who are gathered, you have heard it said. But then in 22, 28, 32, 34, 39, and 44, he says, but I tell you. You have heard it said, but I tell you. Interesting, because if you're one of the people of the day and you sat there listening to this, you know, supposed rabbi, teacher, you know, whoever this guy, what you thought about him, he's suddenly sort of injecting, because I guess most of us know the in-between bits. I don't want to read it all because of time of what he's addressing. You have heard it said, da, 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 but I tell you, oh, new thinking, new teaching, a new yoke from a rabbi. You know, yoke was their understanding of the scriptures. Jesus wasn't attempting to dismiss the law and replace it. What he did was look at the very outwardly looking laws and give them an inward dimension that focused on the heart. It needed a different perspective. And for me, the thing that I see out of that, that I think is key to all that we're going to say today, is this, because I think Jesus' underlying sort of statement that resonates with us today is simply this: our systems have been designed to give us the results that we're getting. If you're in business, that applies to you, not just in church. Our systems have been designed to give us the results that we're getting. So if you want different results, you need to put a different system in place. And that might sound like a bit of business jargon, but it's what I read into what Jesus was saying there. He wasn't saying, get rid of all that Old Testament stuff, get rid of the law, let's abolish this. It's a new day, I'm here, let's do things differently. No, he's taking hold of it, and he's sort of saying, these are the results you're getting because of the law that you've adhered to. What we need now is to take hold of these, to internalize them, because there's a slightly different tweak that we are making, because there's a different result we need here. Let's apply it. Evangelism has always been the forerunner of what most churches have been engaged in. Let me try and be clear, then we don't get confused here. So traditionally, you know, evangelism is that idea of going and calling people who don't know Jesus to whatever, invite them to Christ, and then we make disciples of those people. That's sort of traditionally been the view. Let me tweak that a little bit. Perhaps because of the fear that comes with people saying evangelism, like, oh, you know, that whole, what if we see it differently? Because Jesus didn't use the word. What he said was, go and evangelize. No, he didn't. He said, go and make disciples who would then witness to the world. Evangelism. Interesting. Perhaps part of the that people feel when we use words like evangelism is because we've swapped it around a little bit. Perhaps alpha isn't evangelism, it's discipleship that draws people into an understanding of what life in the kingdom of God and Christ is with, that out of that we're equipping people so that ultimately we might create evangelists. Interesting. Ponder that as we move into the day. So our systems have been designed to give us a result we're getting. If we want different results, we must have a different system. Jesus went around teaching, challenging, modeling. And I want to just read this. It was a quote when I was preparing the other day, and it's easy if I just read it. For any missional movement to survive beyond the initial buzz, the founder must somehow literally live on in his people. The vitality and validity of their message depends on the willingness and capacity of those disciples to faithfully embody, quite literally, his life. The founder is actually alive in them, shining through in a gospel-integrated way. In a real way, disciples must become the gospel to the people around, the embodiment of the real Jesus through the quality of their lives. This transformation begins with a radical reliance on the Spirit of God. So if somehow we get the idea that what Jesus has commanded us to do has got slightly, I'm not saying we've got it all wrong, just slightly miscued somehow, that it's about training people to be the witnesses that we want them to be, perhaps as we look at it, we need to tweak some things. So let me take you into a living, not a living example, but a biblical example to then get us talking a little bit in groups together. Mark 2 verse 14, referring to Jesus, as he passed by, he saw Levi sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him. Levi got up and followed him. Yeah, we're familiar with that. We get the picture. But try just for the next few moments, particularly as we go into groups, to dig a little bit deeper into the significance of that. To the idea that, like people today who come to Christ and they've no knowledge of the scripture, they've no church experience, they've no sense of what community of faith means. So it means that for Levi then and for us and them now, the priorities change. The old life becomes a new life. The old routines suddenly are replaced by some, not all, but some new routines. Levi, for him, the security suddenly became insecure. You see, the backstory to this situation is that this man, Matthew, as we better know him, was a tax collector. Or to his friends, an extortioner, a traitor. He worked for Rome. And therefore, working for Rome, any Jew was considered an outcast in a very literal, physical way. He couldn't be a witness in court. He was expelled from the synagogue. That's the life that this man lived as a born Jew, but now as an employee of the Roman state, taxing the people that worked around him. So why this man? What did Jesus see about this guy? Surely there might have been easier cases for him to pick on, you know, that were a bit further down the line. So we're going to go into groups for a little while. And you've got a piece of paper here with it on, but let me just up front tell you what we're going to do with this. More of an imagination station than, you know, questions for us to answer and policy to produce. Two verses, and we want to investigate the in-between bit. Mark 3:14, Jesus appointed 12 that they might be with him and he might send them out. That's Mark 3:14. A few years later, Acts 4:13, when they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized they were unskilled, ordinary men, they were astonished and took note that these men had been with Jesus. I want to fill the gap a little bit beyond just what we understand of the scriptures and let our imagination run into a little bit of day-to-day routine. So these, don't worry about writing these down. They're on a piece of paper here for you. These are the three questions. When you read Mark 3:14, what was the goal, do we believe, that Jesus was looking for? What was he seeing? You don't just, you know, call people and then there's no plan, like make it up as you go along. There was clearly something got in mind. What was it? What everyday activities did he intentionally plan to move that journey along? And then in the Acts verse, what does it mean that these people saw courage? What's all that about? So, for about, I think it's about 20 minutes or so, feel free to move the chairs and all that. So, you want to get into groups of about, it doesn't matter exactly, but about there's 25 of us or so, groups about five or something like that. I'll give you a sheet each, gather around one of these tables possibly, and then in what time we said here, yeah, in about 20 minutes, Wendy's going to come up and just get some feedback of how our imaginations have run wild with these three questions. So if you don't mind, gather yourself around a table and move your chair. Thank you. Yeah, if you don't mind. And there's a sheet here for each group. And if somebody in the group don't mind just sort of taking the initiative, be the group leader. At 20 to 11, we'll call you back so that Wendy can get a bit of feedback on what we think about these three questions. People, you know this, many of you have been in ministry, have been involved in it, that there are things in our past, whatever it might be, that can really, we keep butting up against it. And somehow, you know, there's a breakthrough needed to be able to really get on and get into what God has called us to do. And we want to give opportunity that if things arise within that, and I'm sure the willingness sort of crowd that we've got here, then we want to make opportunity to sort of say, oh, what a shame, oh, you know, hopefully that'll be okay one day. But actually sort of say, we believe there is prayer that can break through situations, that can knock obstacles down, that can bring you to what Jesus talked about, freedom to live. And for some people, that's just knowing the truth because it will set them free. That's what Jesus said. So what we put down here is, session 8, perhaps open the opportunity of people having prayer for issues that arise. And therefore, somewhere around that time of week 8, you know, us as an SLT being available at church or whatever's appropriate, to say, you know, if this week, in response to what you've chatted about in live groups, this whole question of past affecting our present and future, we just want to be available to just pray freedom into your life, that some of these things that may have bogged you down for years or more recently, you know, that we can get them, at least begin to get the pipe cleaned out and get the fresh water flowing through. That's M28. And believe that it's going to be, you know, an opportunity for us to really do it. Lee, do you want to come and dive in here then and get us talking? A lot in modern life. And in some ways, I really don't, well, I do like the word, but I think it's a very misleading word. You know, I've had people sit, you know, as a church leader and say, you know, I want to be accountable to you. And yeah, that's all good and they mean right. I'm not in any way discrediting them. But people will be accountable to you as much as they want to be, which is not really, it's a bit false. You know, so if I sit here and say, you know, as leaders, you know, I'm assuming this morning we were all up quite early praying for the day and reading our Bibles and wandering around the, you know, and you all nod at me and say, of course we were, Stephen. And in Stephen, did I call myself Stephen then? Flipping heck. Oh, felt my mother's shudder there from the grave. So how do you create that sort of accountability that actually it's not just about drawing a crowd, it's about building people in their faith. And so what I want to do, if you'd sort of pass them, there's sort of one for everybody there, and that way. What I've tried to be concise with this little booklet that I've put together here, and all I'm going to do is sort of talk you through it really, hopefully so that it makes sense. And never before in all the years I've been here have we almost planned a whole year of spiritual input, output, ministry. M28, what is M28? Matthew 28. It's a road that we're going to travel along. And I think it's not the full answer to the question I've just asked, but I think it's going to help us quite a bit. I think if I were to put it in layman's language, it would be a year of discipleship. So if you go back to what I said at sort of 9:30 this morning, this will make some sense. If we want people to witness to the gospel of Christ in their lives, Jesus was very clear, go and make disciples, teaching them and baptizing them were the two things that he said. And you've got that right in the verse at the top here, Matthew 28. So let me just go down that inside page below that verse. Hopefully it sort of speaks for itself, but I just want to draw it out a little bit in this time. In no massive detail, this is more for us to then talk about. If we're going to have a year of discipleship, if it's going to be about people being accountable and people growing in their faith, you know, we've talked about it a lot and Connor highlighted it. We're talking about growth. And growth often in churches, you just think about numbers. And we've often sort of said what we do want to do, we want to grow the church. Of course, we want more people to come and find Jesus. But we also want to grow bigger people. So that them questions we asked earlier on about they saw the courage of Peter and John because they had been with Jesus, there was something identifiable about them that made the people make a statement about them. That's a big challenge. Does your life cause people to ask questions about why you do what you do? That's an awkward one. That can be as simple as you don't quite join in with the dirty language in the office or don't really hear you swear much. And I know that's not the epicenter of like Christian faith, I don't swear. But things that would make people sort of ask something about, or the positivity that you bring, or the fact that, you know, I don't know, there's just something about the way that you respond to situations that makes people ask something about why you are like that when the world's ripping itself apart. A year of discipleship, a year for us to grow bigger people. So here we go, Sunday experience, or I'm just using that phrase, Sunday morning. You'll see in a minute, so much of this is going to be driven through life groups. So you know, want to up the ante in some areas, life groups, so that they're promoted at all levels and people understand if you're part of Life Church, our expectation, we can't demand it, our expectation is that people are part of a life group. If we're talking about discipleship, it's logical that we're going to teach through the Gospels in the early part of 2024, then lead that into the book of Acts so you get the sort of follow-through of discipleship and work out. These are just possibilities for us to discuss. None of this is like, this is what we're doing. Possible inclusions on a Sunday on a Sunday experience, you know, to help this discipleship. What about the odd book review? Clearly, we want to hear stories of what is going on in people's life, testimonies, as we would call them, and events that surround them. The PDP, Personal Discipleship Plan, that's on page 3 that we'll get onto in a second, that everybody who is here in January will get. And you'll see that if you go through those questions, it's very just easy to answer them and for me to collate them and go, yeah, church is in a pretty good state because everybody said they read the Bible, they pray that, and, you know, and you think, let's be realistic, you know. Here's something that I found quite staggering. I was in a ministers' conference, I think just before COVID. 200 full-time church leaders, I think most of them would have been. And this guy at the front, I can't remember his name, he said this, I want you all to close your eyes. Please do not look around. And I want you as ministers to put your hand up if you've read the Bible consistently this week. And then he asked a further question. Basically, he came to the conclusion that about 60% of these predominantly full-time ministers had not read the Bible in over a week. Now, I find that quite, seriously? Seriously? And that's not in any way, well, it is judging them, I guess, isn't it? So I can't say that. But I just find, I don't know if you think I'm being rotten here, but I just find that staggering that as a church leader, I would hope you would be kicking me out the door if in a week, I do try and read it, right, that in a week I'd not read my Bible as a church leader, as somebody's trying to dish out this stuff that's in there. Wah! So that's to go out in January. And let me explain how that's going to work out, because it's not just to hand them out, tick them, get them back in, let's get some, you know, data around what's going on. No, much deeper than that. So you've got 20 questions there. And if you turn over to that, sorry, we will do it in this order. You'll see that we've split it up into four sections. Five questions in each, so there's 20 questions. I'll just whip through them. Spiritual health. Do I spend consistent time with the Bible? Do I pray frequently? Do I find it easy to thank God in all circumstances? Do I prioritize the gathering of Life Church on Sundays and life groups? Do I worship Jesus with a passion? And I'm hoping that most of those are not just yes, I do. Yeah, how? What does that mean? Relational health. Do I freely forgive offenses? Ooh. Are my friendships healthy? What does that mean? Does my past interrupt my present or future? Do my friends and family know I value them with my time and attention? Is my phone/device a distraction when I'm with other people? Stewardship of time and talents and treasure. Do I have a balance between my work life and home life? Do I know I am pursuing what God uniquely created me to be? Do I have a budget that I follow, and do I live within my means? Do I give finance regularly to Life Church? Am I sacrificially involved in a serving ministry in Life Church? Living my 168, do I have confidence in sharing the gospel and my testimony with others? Do I have a heart to reach those far from God? Is my faith having an influence on others? Do I desire and pray for the welfare of this city? Do I pray for and support efforts to get the gospel to unreached people in the world? A few years ago, mixed in with the question of accountability, we launched, and some of you there, some of you weren't, the whole language of 168. And it's become part of our to use Stephen's word, our culture. But I hope it hasn't boiled down to whoever tomorrow morning finishes off and goes like, have a great 168, that it's just simply, go and have a good week, mate. I hope that what we tried to introduce and have continued to draw out is going to take on a new level because 168 is about living a fruitful life, not just having a pleasant week where the sun shines and work isn't too bad and the kids reasonably behaved. It's part of the expression of discipleship that Jesus has called us to. And so those 20 questions, I'm back on page 2 now, following through how this is going to work out. And this is obviously specifically for life group leaders, because we've never been as prescriptive before about life groups as this, and we want this to happen. It's not an optional. So there's 20 questions. You know, life groups predominantly go every other week. So, you know, 52 weeks, that's 26 life groups. Take off a bit of August, take off other few bits. We're leaving you with 20 weeks out of the 26 weeks. We're going to use those questions each week out of those 20 weeks. And if you were here 4 or 5 years ago, you might remember we did a series, and in life groups we had a little video that we did as an introduction. I did one, the bishop did one, Marius, a few other people. I can't remember what the theme was, but it was something to do with something or other, the Bible. So what we're going to do is, for those 20 weeks, going to do a short video just to introduce a subject. I'm talking 2 or 3 minutes, not a lengthy one. Just to lead into almost the point of what we're getting with the question we are asking. And so whether you're part of a life group or leading a life group, there's going to be a sort of onus on there that more than ever before, you're not just leading a group, you are discipling people into the way of Christ. Now you go back to the questions we asked earlier on about the intentionality of Jesus. You know, what did he plan intentionally, regularly? And when I put that question there, I was thinking he did have an underlying agenda. Of course he did. And that was my thinking with the question. There's an underlying agenda to push out the kingdom of God, to get these guys understanding something of what it was about so that they might continue it, discipleship. You know, there was everything he did had the intention of delivering that. That's my answer to that question. And that's what we want to sort of do with this. And I get very excited all the time about anything. The thought of this together as a whole church. So currently with kids and everybody, I think there's about 260 people on the books. Just to get the whole church talking around these things and the excitement that over 2024, people are going to just steadily grow at various paces in their faith and discipleship that will make them the witnesses that we keep pushing them to be. Excites me a lot. We're doing that together. It's not just random. Some groups are doing this, some groups are doing that. You're growing, you're not growing so much. You're focusing on this. No, we're focusing together as a church for this period of time. Feedback from life group leaders, and we've just suggested this here, but it's not an exact, you know, just so that we can keep up and have some contact and conversation together, just to see how this is going and how these things are working out within the context of your life group. Because we're talking about discipleship, we'd also like to run a Bible school. So, you know, question mark, possibly 3 1-month Bible schools. Something like a Saturday morning, 8:30 till 10 o'clock. We did it several years ago. I don't know were you around for that one, Jeremy? When John Pettifor, we did about an autumn of it. Want to do that again and get somebody in from outside, you know, who can. We talk a lot about life application in our teaching, rightly so. And I think an opportunity like this is perhaps move away from just the simple life application to actually get into some, I guess, what we traditionally just call theology. And I've thrown a few things on there, you know, teaching about the covenants in the Bible, incarnation, original sin, some of the myths around faith, some fairly meaty stuff. That won't be compulsory. That'll just be an optional. But our thinking is that people will sign in for that. We'll do a month. These are the subjects. This is the timing of it. You know, sign in and be part of it. So it won't be just a turn up next Saturday if you can be bothered. You know, it'll be a commitment to go through some of this. Personal discipleship plan. I've sort of gone through that. Early January delivery, but usable all year round. And one thing that we do talk about in partnership, but we want to emphasize it, and you'll see that this doesn't answer it, but helps us with some of the challenges here, that then we're going to say to everybody, our expectation is that if you're part of Life Church, you have a serving role within this church. Again, we can't nail people down, demand it, but that is our clear expectation. So, you know, just literally sitting with people and, you know, so where do you think you fit, mate, if you're not serving already? That, you know, part of, and that's not suddenly becoming big brother. I think it's just, why do we serve? You know, you do it. So I'm speaking to the, I'm preaching at the choir here. Because the faith that we have bought into is about service and sacrifice. We follow a man who said he did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And the base of it is service and sacrifice. And that, as you know, is an element of what you are involved in. You know, if we go around here and say, how much time do you, Connor, do you, Gillian, you know, so on, give in a week to preparing for Life Kids, for your life group, for me, you know, for whatever it might be, you know, let me just say that's an hour a week. You know, that's a sacrifice, because we've all got families and time and things we could be doing, but it's part of the basis of the man that we are following, Jesus Christ. So expectation that everyone has a serving role. And then these prayer appointments, and this is something you might recall that Tracy started a couple of years ago and sort of bobbled along a little bit, never really sort of got going, but But I'm thinking here, particularly with session 8, which is, does my past interrupt my present or future? You know, you can just easily answer that yes or no. But actually, for some people, you know this, many of you have been in ministry, been involved in it, that there are things in our past, whatever it might be, that can really, we keep butting up against it. And somehow, you know, there's a breakthrough needed to be able to really get on and get into what God has called us to do. And we want to give opportunity that if things arise within that, and I'm sure the will in a sort of crowd that we've got here, then we want to make opportunity to sort of say, oh, what a shame, oh, you know, hopefully that'll be okay one day. But actually sort of say, we believe there is prayer that can break through situations, that can knock obstacles down, that can bring you to what Jesus talked about, freedom to live. And for some people, that's just knowing the truth because it will set them free. That's what Jesus said. So what we put down here is session 8, perhaps open the opportunity of people having prayer for issues that arise. And therefore, somewhere around that time of week 8, you know, us as an SLT being available at church or whatever's appropriate, to say, you know, if this week, in response to what you've chatted about in live groups, this whole question of past affecting our present and future, we just want to be available to just pray freedom into your life, that some of these things that may have bogged you down for years or more recently, you know, that we can get them, at least begin to get the pipe cleaned out and get the fresh water flowing through. That's M28. And believe that it's going to be, you know, an opportunity for us to really do it. Lee, do you want to come and dive in here then and get us talking?